Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for August 1st, 2016. We will begin today with a listing of the funerals scheduled for Monday, August 1st, 2016. Charles W. Chuck Atterbury, 78, of Springfield, formerly of Decatur, at 10 a.m. in Calvary Cemetery in Springfield. Mary Ann Edwards, 83, of Kenny, formerly of Decatur, at 10 a.m. in Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown. E. Marguerite Susie Gallagher, 90, of Mattoon, at 2 p.m. in Dodge Grove Center, Mattoon. June Juanita McConnell, 98, of Shelbyville, formerly of Pena, at 1 p.m. in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville. Maya Kai McKnight, 41, of Decatur, at 11 a.m. in Maranatha Assembly of God Church. Terry L. Crabtree Moses, 60, of Decatur, at 11 a.m. in North Folk Cemetery. Roy M. Ousley, 94, of Decatur, at 3 p.m. in Mountford Free Methodist Church. William E. Sanders, 80, of Fillmore, at 10 a.m. in Miller Funeral Home, Fillmore. Marjorie L. Tick, 87, of Longboat Key, Florida, formerly of Decatur, at 1 p.m. in Fairlawn Cemetery. And the funerals listed as pending for today, Monday, August 1st, include Marguerite McNeese, 98, of Shelbyville, who died Sunday, July 31st, 2016, arrangements by Howe and Yaki Funeral Home in Shelbyville. Joseph B. Melton, 85, of McLean, who died Sunday, July 31st, 2016, arrangements by Peasley Quirum Funeral Home in Atlanta. Shirley Osland, 81, of Decatur, who died Sunday, July 31st, 2016, arrangements by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Dorothy Skipper, 95, of Blue Mound, died Saturday, July 30th, 2016. Arrangements by Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Blue Mound. And Jeffrey Tokars, 43, of Decatur, who died Sunday, July 31st, 2016. Arrangements by Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. And obituaries for today include Robert E. Anderson, Sr. of Decatur. Robert E. Anderson, Sr. of Decatur passed away at 6:08 a.m. Saturday, July 30th, 2016 at St. Mary Hospital. Funeral service will be Wednesday, August 3rd at 10 a.m. at Tabernacle Baptist Church, 650 North Wickles Road, Decatur. Visitation will be Tuesday at from 5 to 7 p.m. and 1 hour before the service at the church. Entombment will be at the Pietà Garden Mausoleum at Graceland Cemetery. Jack L. Hayes, Ramsey. 61-year-old Jack L. Hayes of Ramsey died Saturday, July 30th at 10:32 a.m. at Sweetbriar Retirement Home, Vandalia, Illinois. Funeral services will be on Wednesday, August 3rd at 11 o'clock a.m. at Christ's Tabernacle, Herrick, Illinois. Visitation will be at 9 o'clock a.m. until the service. Burial will be in Ramsey Cemetery, Ramsey, Illinois. Darlene Hinton of Decatur. Darlene Hinton, 83, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, July 30th, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital with her family by her side. Services to celebrate Darlene's life will be at 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016 at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, August 2nd, 2016 at the funeral home. Memorials are suggested to the Kiwanian Scholarship Fund. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Karen Elaine Lake. Karen Elaine Lake, age 65 of Cape Coral, Florida, previously of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at Hope Hospice in Cape Coral on Thursday, July 28, 2016. A celebration of her life was held prior to her death. It was her wish that her ashes be scattered at the beach at sunset. Memorial contributions are welcome to Hope Hospice Development Office, 9470 Health Park Circle, Fort Myers, Florida, 33908. Lillian Jeanette Moore, Decatur. Lillian Jeanette Jean Moore, 98, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, July 29, 2016, in Imboden Creek Living Center. Mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Wednesday, August 3, 2016, in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, with Reverend Rick Welton as celebrant. Burial will follow in Calvary Cemetery in Iliopolis. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials be made to Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Ruth Ann Powers, Decatur. Ruth Ann Powers, 86, of Decatur, Illinois, died Saturday, July 30, 2016, in Carle Foundation Hospital, Urbana, Illinois. Private graveside services will be conducted and a memorial service will be held at a later date. Charles W. Atterbury, Decatur. Charles Chuck W. Atterbury of Decatur, 78, of Springfield, formerly of Decatur, passed away at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday, July 26, 2016, at his residence. Graveside ceremony will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Monday, August 1, 2016, at Calvary Cemetery, 2200 North 1st Street in Springfield. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Jude Children's Hospital, P.O. Box 1000, Department 142, Memphis, Tennessee, 38148. Daryl Dean Beasley, Mansfield. Daryl Dean Beasley, 78, of Mansfield, passed away at 8:17 p.m. Friday, July 22, 2016, at Kirby Medical Center, Monticello. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 6th at the Mansfield United Methodist Church, Mansfield. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, August 6th at the church. Interment will be in Mansfield Cemetery with military rites accorded. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, the family suggests memorial contributions may be made to Mansfield or Monticello United Methodist Church food pantries, Piatt County Faith in Action, Habitat for Humanity, Kirby Medical Center, or Harbor Lights Hospice. Lynn Blissard, Arcola. Lynn Anderson Blissard, 60, now of Gilroy, California, formerly of Arcola, Illinois, passed away at 3:09 p.m. on Wednesday, July 20th, 2016, at her residence. A memorial service will be held at noon on Saturday, August 6th, 2016, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. The family asks that in lieu of flowers, donations be made to Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola, Illinois, 61910. Wesley Todd Bohm, Decatur. Wesley Todd Bohm, 38, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, July 28, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services to celebrate the life of Todd Bohm will be at 10 o'clock a.m. Wednesday, August 3, 2016, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Burial will be in Harristown Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the family to be designated later. Kent G. Davis, Decatur. Kent G. Davis, 54, formerly of Decatur, passed away October 21, 2015, in Florida. A memorial service will be held at the First Church of God in Lovington, Illinois, on August 6th at 3 p.m., with Pastor Rodney Hauser officiating. E. Marguerite Gallagher, Mattoon. E. Marguerite Susie Gallagher, age 90, of Mattoon, Illinois, passed away at 5:45 p.m., July 29, 2016, at the Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. The graveside service in her honor will begin at 2 o'clock p.m. Monday, August 1, 2016, at Dodge Grove Cemetery. Visitation will be held Monday from noon to 1:30 p.m. at Mitchell Jordan Funeral Home, 1200 Wabash Avenue, Mattoon, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorials in her honor may be made to Mattoon Community Food Center, 600 Moultrie, Mattoon, Illinois, 61938. And we will go now to the opinion page. We have an opinion featured by Dana Milbank. Trump-style speculation used on Trump. Donald Trump never met a conspiracy theory he didn't like until now. He has dabbled in, among other things, the notion that President Obama is a Muslim born in Kenya, the Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia was murdered, and that Ted Cruz's father was involved in the JFK assassination. But on one topic, Trump is conspicuously incurious, the suggestion that he is complicit in a plan by Vladimir Putin to influence the U.S. election. Consider how Trump might react to the following fact pattern if the candidate involved weren't Donald Trump, but let's pick a name at random here, Hillary Clinton. The candidate's real estate empire, unable to borrow from most U.S. banks, gets capital from Russian sources. Such transfers couldn't occur without Putin's blessing. The candidate's campaign manager, Paul Manafort, has worked extensively for pro-Putin oligarchs. One of the candidate's foreign policy advisors, Michael Flynn, was filmed sitting with Putin at a Moscow banquet celebrating a Russian propaganda network. Another advisor, Carter Page, has close ties to Gazprom, the Russian energy company under Putin's thumb. One of the only interferences the campaign made in the Republican platform was to remove language calling for providing lethal defense weapons to Ukraine in its fight against Russian-backed separatists. The candidate cast doubt on the utility of NATO and said he might not come to the aid of Baltic members of the alliance attacked by Russia. Putin has aimed to destabilize rival powers by supporting extremist parties in several European countries. His state news outlets have been heavily supportive of the candidate. The Russian ambassador to the United States attended a campaign speech by the candidate, and Putin described the candidate as talented. The candidate said he was honored. Russian intelligence hacked the Democratic National Committee, and experts say handed the emails to WikiLeaks for release on the eve of the Democratic Convention. If the Clinton campaign were so extensively interwoven with Putin's Russia, it's a safe bet that Trump would be demanding that Clinton release her tax returns to prove that she's not beholden to Putin, just as he demanded that Obama release his birth certificate. He would also very likely float allegations masquerading as questions by using phrases, "a lot of people have said," or "I'm hearing," or "there's something we don't know about." But Trump, I'm hearing, won't be doing that in this case, so let's help him. The following are all phrases Trump has used to float conspiracy theories, but this time applied to his Putin ties, combined with wild Trump-style speculation. A lot of people have said Putin is trying to get Trump elected so he can blackmail the American president. Somebody told me Trump would completely go out of business if Putin took back all the Russian money he let Trump have. I don't know exactly what's going on, but I just heard Trump's airplane would be grounded immediately. Manafort helping the oligarchs? Flynn having dinner with Putin? Page getting money from Gazprom? No coincidence. Now it's coming out that Putin wants to destabilize America. There's something fishy about the whole thing. And why did Trump propose changing NATO and Ukraine policy in ways that would benefit Putin? Obviously, some people think it's evil intentions. I think it's incompetence. Regardless, a lot of people think it's evil intentions. I don't bring up the possibility that Trump has already been bribed or blackmailed by Putin because I don't know enough to really discuss it. I will say there are people who continue to bring it up because they think it was absolutely bribery and blackmail. I don't do that because I don't think it's fair. I'm hearing it's a big topic, the question of whether Trump is guilty of treason. I'm not sure. I mean, let people make their own determination. Trump never denied that Putin was his patron. He cannot give us his tax returns. He didn't pay his taxes, or if he did, there's something in those returns that is very bad for him. Now, somebody told me, and I have no idea whether this is bad for him or not, but perhaps it would be, that he owes billions to Putin. Somebody said, maybe that's the reason he doesn't want to show his returns. I don't think so. I just don't think he paid his taxes. Why is Trump so emphatic about not talking about his Putin connections? He gets it better than anybody understands. There's something going on. There's something we don't know about. I don't know. All I know is what's on the internet. Wow. And from Eugene Robinson, an opinion piece featured, Democrats turn to Reagan. Democrats have done a remarkable thing this week in Philadelphia. They framed this election as an epic struggle, not just to continue the policies of President Obama, but to renew the sunlit, optimistic Americanism of Ronald Reagan. In his valedictory speech Wednesday night, Obama quoted Reagan's description of the country as a shining city on a hill and contrasted it with Donald Trump's nightmarish vision of a divided crime scene. Obama also used famous words from another Republican president, Theodore Roosevelt, to praise Hillary Clinton as someone who is actually in the arena, who strives valiantly, who errs, but who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement. When Clinton came on stage and the president embraced her in a bear hug, he was passing along not just his own legacy as a two-term Democratic president, but that of the consequential Republican presidents who preceded him as well. It was an audacious thing to do in a venue where no one, except possibly some of the security guards, shared Reagan's conservative philosophy. But it was smart politics, and it also reflected objective reality. Trump is an alien, aberrational, dangerous force in American politics, and must never be allowed to wield the awesome powers of the presidency. The back-to-back conventions in Cleveland and Philadelphia could not have been more different. The Republican gathering looked thrown together and lacking in both star power and historical resonance, largely because so many GOP luminaries refused to have anything to do with crowning the usurper Trump. The entire Bush family stayed away, including the last two Republican presidents, as did the party's two most recent nominees, John McCain and Mitt Romney. The assembled Republicans did come away unified in their determination to defeat Clinton. But the pessimism and anger in Cleveland were extreme, putting the GOP on record as asserting that the United States is in grave crisis, teetering on the edge of some fathomless abyss. By any objective measure, this is absurd, but many Americans are anxious about jobs and the slow-growing economy, and about terrorism, immigration, and demographic change. Trump won the nomination by exacerbating these fears, and presenting an all-purpose solution, himself. An all-star lineup of speakers systematically sought to reveal Trump as an ignorant windbag full of inherent bluster. Leon Panetta, who who was CIA director when U.S. operatives killed Osama bin Laden, said Trump is manifestly unqualified to be commander-in-chief. Vice President Joe Biden said that no major party nominee has ever known less or been less prepared. Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, an independent who is one of the wealthiest men in the country, blasted Trump as a poor businessman. The richest thing about Donald Trump is his hypocrisy, and implored voters to choose a sane, competent person in Clinton. Vice presidential nominee Tim Kaine focused mostly on introducing himself to the nation, but he did unveil a passable Trump imitation, and he showed off the fluent Spanish that he will surely use to woo Hispanic audiences. It fell to Obama to make the larger philosophical critique, not just of Trump, but of Trumpism. This was no ordinary election, he said. This is a more fundamental choice about who we are as a people. What we heard in Cleveland last week wasn't particularly Republican, and it sure wasn't conservative. Instead, Obama said, Trump presented a deeply pessimistic vision of a country where we turn against each other and turn away from the rest of the world. There were no serious solutions to pressing problems, just the fanning of resentment and blame and anger and hate. Obama said that Trump is just offering slogans and he's offering fear, but would lose the election because he underestimates Americans. We are not a fragile people. We're not a frightful people, Obama said. Our power doesn't come from some self-declared savior promising that he alone can restore order as long as we do things his way. We don't look to be ruled. The president promised that anyone who threatens our values, whether fascists or communists or jihadists or homegrown demagogues, will always fail in the end. It was a Reagan-esque defense of American ideals, clearly designed to appeal not just to Democrats, but to independents and moderate Republicans as well. The progressive wing of the party might not be thrilled with all the uncritical flag-waving, but the Gipper would not recognize or be welcomed in Trump's GOP. It is smart to invite his admirers to cross the aisle. And from the Life page. A different, beautiful writer focuses on beauty everywhere. Article by Teresa Churchill, Herald and Review senior writer. This from Springfield. For Courtney Westlake, beauty resides not in the eye of the beholder, but in the heart. That's a message of her first book being released today about her experience mothering Brenna, a daughter born in 2011 with the most severe type of ichthyosis, a skin disorder characterized by thick, hard, and scaling skin. True beauty is a way of living and being, not a way of looking, the 32-year-old author said in a telephone interview from her home in Springfield. We are all created different, but what unites us is our shared humanity, and we need to focus more on that. A staff writer at the Herald and Review from 2006 to 2007, Westlake has written a blog about her family's experiences since Brenna's birth and self-published a Christian children's book in 2013 called That's How You Know. Her new book, A Different Beautiful, Discovering and Celebrating Beauty in Places You Never Expected, contains the same overarching theme but is intended for adults. Westlake said she wishes people would let God, not society, define what is good and beautiful, and the parents would talk to their children about it. She said she'd be surprised if people didn't notice Brenna's unusual appearance and the thick lotion she wears to stay comfortable, but would hope that after their initial reaction, they would simply see her as another child. The worst, she writes, is when other parents grab their children and move away after they express curiosity. They're embarrassed, and I understand that, Westlake said, but it feels like you're hiding from our family. I wish you would relate to us as you would to any other family on the playground. Westlake said she began writing things down for a possible book during Brenna's first year, discussed what to include with her husband, Evan, to decide what would be best for them and their children. Connor 6 and Brenna 4.5, and cut down on the frequency of her blogs and other writing assignments while writing the book over a 6-month period last year. Brenna's difficulties healing from the removal of her feeding tube last August did not take away from the process, as Westlake was running ahead of schedule and could devote herself to her daughter, but the family struggle did become the basis for Chapter 15. Although the author believes her book will be helpful to other parents of children with special needs, she said its themes resonate with people across the board. The first chapter, about giving in to Brenna's request to paint her toenails, despite uncertainty over how her body would react, nicely sums up what Westlake has learned from being her mother. How often do we notice that people make a snap judgment about them without opening our hearts to really getting to know more of their story, she asks. There is a whole new kind of beautiful to be discovered when we stop closing our eyes and our hearts to what is unfamiliar or unexpected. When we focus on the goodness we are feeling rather than seeing, we can learn what it truly means to celebrate beauty in life, the joy, the passion, the deep relationships with each other and God, the dazzling, fleeting moments in front of us that might not otherwise cause us to pause. About the book, the title is A Different Beautiful, Discovering and Celebrating Beauty in Places You Never Expected. The list price is $14.99. The launch party is from 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, August 2nd, at Piper Glen Golf Club. There's a book signing from 11 to 1 p.m. on Friday, August 5th at the Memorial Medical Center, both in Springfield. It's available online and in bookstores. And finally, from the local page, the A3 Briefs from Decatur Crossing Food Share. In celebration of National Health Center Week, August 8th to 12th, Crossing Healthcare will sponsor a Central Illinois Food Bank healthy foods distribution. About 13,000 pounds of produce will be given to anyone who brings a laundry basket or empty box to the event. Learn more about what Crossing Healthcare has to offer the community during National Health Center Week at www.crossinghealthcare.org. From Springfield, Rail Signal Fines. Disregarding railroad crossing lights will come with a heftier fine under new Illinois law. The legislation signed into law last week by Governor Bruce Rauner will double the fines currently on the books. A first offense will cost $500, and each offense after that will be punishable with a $1,000 fine. In the Herald and Review Photo Contest, vacation photographs often capture a perfect moment in a favorite place. Send your best vacation photos for a chance to win up to $1,000 in the Designations Photo Contest. The top photographs submitted will also be featured in a national publication reaching more than 1 million households. To enter, visit herald-review.com/travel. Upload your favorite vacation photo and let your friends know that the contest voting period is August 8th to 11th. Those who submit entries will be eligible for one of three top prizes: $1,000 for first place, $500 for second place, and $250 for third place. And this has been Wendy Bauer reading to you from the Decatur Herald and Review today, August 1st, 2016. I will look forward to reading with you again in the future. Thank you.